Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Well, hi, everyone. This is the Macko and Cos podcast. Apologies. I think we've missed a week or two. We were a little bit tardy. Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm good. You know, Matt, I'm sure everybody who listens to the pod expects what I'm going to say here. It was all me.
Oh, yeah.
It's always me.
Yes.
You are the rock. You are the rock of Gibraltar. You are unmovable, unshakable. We were laughing earlier before we cracked open the mics that when you used to pick me up to go to work, if you were 2 minutes late, I would call the cops.
Yeah.
You are the most dependable person ever.
I'm pretty dependable. I think I need to be because I don't think I'm smart enough or handsome enough to be non-dependable. Like the great actor or musician, you're fine if Madonna is 45 minutes late for a show. It's Madonna. But for the people that are not Madonna, you got to find a way to overcompensate.
I used to call it Brad Pitt's beard.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Brad Pitt can have any beard he wants, and everyone will say, what a handsome guy.
Yeah, it doesn't
Bob matter. Mackiewicz has that beard, and people are calling their local authorities.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, why is Sandra allowing this? I think my favorite thing to do, if I wanted to shame you, would be to look at the length of time between when I text and you text me back. I remember once texting you something about the pod, and then 6 weeks later, you were all into these fantasy football questions. And I remember showing it to Amy, and Amy's like, well, doesn't that bother you? I'm like, no, I've known Bob my entire life. I don't take any of it personal. And in fact, I'm going to do some research on his third wide receiver.
Okay, so thank you for that.
Yeah.
There's two things here that Amy doesn't understand about us.
Mm-hmm.
One is, you should be mad, but you're not that guy.
Correct.
Right. Like, yeah. It's not just me and the fact that it's me. You wouldn't be mad at anybody because why get upset? Why create negative emotion?
Save the anger for when you need it.
Right. And then the other thing is, you and I have done this dance a lot.
2000.
And my trick, my Kaiser Soze move is I am all in. And when I am so there.
Yes.
And when I'm not, I am not there.
It's a perfect one because Kaiser Soze disappears.
It just disappears.
Then destroys not only his enemy, but his enemy's family. His enemy's friends are friends, and he destroys them all out. Yes. And then you disappear, but then you come back with ... and 100 things.
Right. When I pop up, I am there to do business, and I mean business.
Yes.
When I disappear, I am gonzo. Actually, I should say, and I kind of want to share this with people because, you know, we've talked to people, like the people who listen to our pod often communicate with us, and there's a lot of awesome people.
Yes.
We've created personal relationships with a lot of people. And actually, there's a lot of people I miss. They were really nice, and it was good to hear from them. I had the, like, shitty 6 months. You know, my father passed away last year. That was hard. Taking care of my mother has been hard. We don't talk enough about the sandwich generation. We're trying to raise kids and take care of older people.
Yeah.
It's pretty demanding. And I'm the only one in the city. Like, I'm the only family member here, so all the tasks fall on my shoulders. And I'm not complaining. I'm just saying,
that's the reality.
That's the reality of it.
Your sister's in Germany, and it is.
And we're a small family.
And you're a very small family, and that is very tough. You know, we dealt on my side, I don't mind being personal about it, like a couple of years ago, my dad was dealing with basically financial predator. A woman who moved in basically with my dad, who was 30 plus years younger than him during COVID, because that's what you want to do, move in with an 85, 88 year old man when she was like 50. And, you know, then we were dealing with that and lawyers and legal stuff and all of this. And I felt bad for like some of my family, the ones that were, you know, powers of attorney. They had to deal with all this stuff that I didn't have to deal with. So the way I try to make up for it is I visit my dad once a week. I go see him every week. He's in a really nice home. And my job is to tell jokes. My job is for an hour and a half is to make him laugh. And that's my job. And I do that because A, I want to. B, it makes him happy. But also it allows like my twin brother doesn't have to feel stressed to visit all the time. Because I'm like, Josh, you're raising kids. You're all over the place. You dealt with lawyers. You had to talk to that woman way more than I did. So we all have a part to play, and it's easier on my end because I have more siblings. So that is really tough for you.
You're a good brother. a good son and a heck of a good guy. And then when I lost my job at Apple, like, I didn't lose it because I was bad at the job. Mm-hmm. They just got rid of us for AI.
Yeah.
Which was an interesting experience because, you know, show business has ups and downs. Like, that's just, if you can't live with that, don't be in show business. You're going to have great times and you're going to have lean times. The excitement is part of the thrill. You know, like, you just don't know. But AI was different. I looked at this and I thought, this industry is contracting all the time. Places aren't just not hiring people because smaller headcounts. They're not hiring people because there are no headcounts. We're just getting software to do it. And so I kind of looked at this and thought, do I need to get out of show business? Like, do I just, like, I've got time left to work. Do I need to go back and get my teacher's degree or become a therapist or something? I don't know. And then at the end of it, I thought, you know, you ever seen the movie Big Night?
Yes.
Stanley Tucci?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, the restaurant. Yeah. Yeah.
And they put on this big meal because Louis Prima's going to show up. And if they impress him, he's going to tell all his friends and it's going to make the restaurant forever. And he just never shows up. They cook the most amazing meal and he never shows up. And the last scene, I think, is one of the truest scenes in the whole world. It's the two brothers and they go through all these battles to get to this point and it doesn't work out for them. And what do? The last scene is just them sitting quietly eating the meal.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do. You keep going. So I thought, that's it. And for everybody out there who's going through bumps and bruises, because Gen X, it's not the easiest time for us. As my great-grandfather used to say in his broken English, keep and go. So I'm here to keep and go, Matt. And I missed you, honestly. Like, doing the pod with you is one of the most fun things of the week, always.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. And also, it helps me with my job on air, and it sharpens me. And sometimes I go over, you know, some of my opening thoughts. By the way.
Yeah, you get to workshop stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I work.
I'm your out-of-town performance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Today's, it's a kind of a Mike McDaniel, Josh Allen thing.
I was going to ask you about Mike McDaniel. Should we dive right in? Because I actually was going to talk to you about Kimmel first, just because I know you're a fan, and I kind of wanted to hear your thoughts there. Do you want to do tonight's football game or Kimmel first?
We'll do sports, and then we'll go back to Kimmel. And by the way, speaking of business, Jeff Pollock, thrilled that we're doing the pod. Anyone listening, if you need a lawyer, actually, he did help us on our journey with my father and everything, because we needed a lawyer. JeffPollock.com, Jeff with a G, JeffPollock.com is where you go. Just a really good, decent man who will become definitely part of your life. Every now and then he texts me and he's like, does CC have her driver's license yet? Randomly, he will text me, does Bob's daughter have her driver's license yet? So just to give you an idea.
4 months, Jeff, 4 months. And then officially, my shame cannot get lower.
There are so many people like Michael Landsberg and everyone at Off the Record. There are so many people at TSN Radio that are so excited for your daughter to get her license.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, well, let's talk about the football game tonight. Yeah. The Thursday nighter is...
should be shit.
Yeah, it looks like a really bad game. Buffalo and Miami. Buffalo scored, 81 points over the last two games, their first two games. Miami looks terrible.
Yeah, yeah, 71.
71?
Yeah, 41 against
Baltimore. Yeah, right, and then 30, whatever. Right, sorry. Okay, so let's start with Miami then, because you brought up Mike McDaniel. And this is interesting. Is he, like, are we... two games in and there's a coach on the hot seat?
He has the hottest of all the seats.
Yeah.
2 years ago, they scored 70 on Denver. Denver now is considered the class in terms of defensively. 2 years ago, they nearly beat Buffalo with their third string quarterback on the road in Buffalo, losing 34-31 with Skylar Thompson. Mike McDaniel was the genius coach, the empathetic coach, the quirky coach, the coach that said, hey, we're not boss and a worker, we are partners. And now it's all gone to shit. And it's one of the things my opening thought is just how fast that all changes. And by the way, it was last year where Tua Tagovailoa said that Brian Flores is a terrible person. And everyone's like, ooh, Brian, he might not ever work again. And now, a year later, Brian Flores, defensive coordinator of Minnesota, is the hot tactician who probably will be a head coach soon after Mike McDaniel gets fired. Life comes at you pretty fast.
This is a really interesting point. I was wondering on the way over here on the bike, what goes rotten faster? Like fruit.
Yeah.
What goes rotten faster? First-year quarterbacks or brilliant offensive coordinators who become head coaches?
It's the coaching one. Because we fall in love with the coordinator and that we just assume they can continue to do it. By the way, Ben Johnson, the Chicago Bears.
Exactly, the name I was going to bring up.
You know, they got all those weapons, and you got Caleb, first overall pick, we'll see. But with Mike McDaniel, and I think part of it is a lot of old school coaches who now work in the media, they don't like Mike McDaniel, who represents this very different way, new age analytics.
Well, he's a bit dubious-y.
Yeah,
he is. Right? He's got a bit of a dubious vibe in that he doesn't look the part.
Nope.
He talks sensitively.
He does.
And he seems, I can't say smug, but there's a sense of, you can tell he's smart. God, people hate that.
They do.
They hate it when you sound smart. He tries to play it down, but you can't.
Yeah.
Right? You're in a room full of people who, you know, like Terry Bradshaw. I think it'd be awesome if he went all the way.
Yeah.
I agree. I think the great point, Terry.
Awesome.
And then he's out there talking about, you know, new age psychology, and people are like, shut it down.
Shut it down.
Just score 70 on Denver.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's like the postseason wins are not a quarterback stat. Okay, shut up with perspective. Did you fucking win the game or not? Yeah, like that's my thought on that game.
Is it fair, though? I guess that's the question. Because when Tyreek Hill made the move from Kansas City over to Miami, as a Bills enthusiast, which we'll get to, as a Bills enthusiast, I was really worried. Because I watched him kill us game after game after game. And Tua had moments where you thought, well, I don't know if he's going to be a top five quarterback, but he's probably a top 10 quarterback, and probably for a while.
Yep.
Those things have gone away. Hill's a mess. Tua's health, enormous question mark. So is the criticism on the coach in this case fair?
It's fair in the sense that you have seen since, I think it was 2 years ago. I know these numbers. This was my opening thought. This was 7 a.m. me getting work done. That 2 years ago, Miami had like a three, four game lead on Buffalo for the division. They were like 8-3. And at that point, they have basically just shit the bed since. They lost in the playoffs, but it's in Kansas City, the coldest day. And Buffalo has just gone up, up, and up. So I think with Mike McDaniel, it's not about what's happening now. It's what's happened over the last year and a half. It's not totally fair because Miami made the playoffs back-to-back years for the first time since 2000. But it's more the downward trajectory of the team. It's Tua. Has the league figured him and that offense out? Are they, and this is the worst one, are they soft? And if there's a reputation that the team is soft, coach, go bye-bye.
Okay, so I love this thought, and you hit such great points. So downward trajectory, sure, that's always a concern, but that's not a week 3 concern.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that should last at least until week 8 or 9 before you start going, we're really trending down. The idea that he's been figured out, that kind of goes to the first-year quarterback thing, where you see guys in the first year have some success, and then the league sort of figures them out and shuts them down. That happens all the time. It happens with starting pitchers in baseball. Happens all the time. And so it is with offensive coordinators who become head coaches. People figure out their ticks. God, they're paid a lot of money to do it, and there's so many smart people just working 24/7 to defeat your scheme. It usually happens. But the final point, Matt, now we've crossed the Rubicon here, Matt, because is my scheme perfect? No. Are we sliding down? Maybe. Oh, but we're soft.
Yep.
That is the ultimate sports sin. We see it with the Leafs. If the Leafs aren't good, but they're battered and bruised, we're like, oh, they tried hard.
Mm-hmm.
If they're good and they got beaten by a team that tried harder, we hate them.
Yeah. And that's what's going on with Miami.
It's a great point.
It's the soft thing. Also, when you lose, when you're down 31-0 to Daniel Jones and the Colts in week 1, there's losses, and then there's losses.
Yeah.
And that certainly stuck out as well. That doesn't help.
So they play Buffalo tonight, and Buffalo's on fire. Is there a team in the NFL that relies so much on one player quite so much as Buffalo?
No, it's not even close. It's not even close. Lamar Jackson has been spectacular through the first 2 weeks, but he's got a better defense. Mm-hmm. He's got Derrick Henry. Zay Flowers is a better receiver than anyone on Buffalo. No. Now, what Josh Allen has two things. Continuity on the offensive line, continuity with head coach. But that defense is average at best, and the skill players, James Cook is good. James Cook, B+. He's a B+. You want to go A-? Fine. But everyone else around are kind of B's, B pluses. So no team relies on one player more than Buffalo does on Allen.
Now, I threw this question out to you, and you answered it brilliantly. So I'm going to share this on the pod. I was trying to think of who is a player, like a quarterback, who's considered the best in the league, who has so little around him. Quite like how far back do you have to go historically before there's one guy who's considered the best with so little help? And your answer was brilliant. What was it?
It was 1996, Brett Favre.
Yeah.
The Green Bay Packers, Sterling Sharp. Everyone says, well, he's Sharp. No, Sharp.
That's what I said.
Yeah, Sharp had to retire after 1994 because of an injury. And if you go back, they had a very good defense. They had Reggie White. They had Leroy Butler. They had a good defense. But on offense, they had so little. They had so little skill position. And they went on to go on and win. It was the year when the Packers won the Super Bowl. This wasn't even when they had like Dorsey Levens. And I'll get off mid to late 1990s.
No, I love it. Keep throwing out the names. Everybody loves it because you haven't thought about these people in 25 years.
Antonio Freeman. We don't need to do it.
Come on, you're enjoying. Look, you're showing off a bit. I love it.
Of course. I mean, Mark Chimero is known more for being in a hot tub with an underage girl. I will say, if we're going to do more recent,
yeah,
give credit to Patrick Mahomes getting to the Super Bowl last year with mediocre defense and not much great stuff. Yeah. Odd moments from Travis Kelce. But, you know, like Mahomes last year, all those going 11-0, whatever it was, in one score games was incredible. So I'll go Mahomes recently, but I always think of Brett Favre and a lot of his years when he was winning the MVP did not have a lot on him offensively.
There was that moment last week when Josh Allen went out and he was holding his nose and you couldn't tell what it was, but it was weird because he made a beeline for the sideline and it looked bad. And I saw the whole season go up in smoke. This is a really weird place to be if there's other Bills fans out there, because you feel like you might win the Super Bowl or you might win six games. There's not a lot of teams where you can realistically say we might go all the way or we might be a sub-400 winning percentage team.
If you put the 15th ranked quarterback on the Buffalo Bills and we decided on Bo Nix. Go Bo Nix.
Who's fine.
Yeah. And listen, young guy, great rookie season. He's thrown a bunch of turnover picks this year. They're a 7-win team at most with Bo Nix at quarterback and not Josh Allen. So, yeah, he's Allen. And Lamar Jackson is more spectacular. Allen's the MVP, at least right now in September.
And I'll repeat, because I shared this with you last night, but I think it's a good one. My first music sports crossover analogy of the, I don't know, version 6, whatever version we're on now, of the pod.
Yeah.
It's like if Jim Morrison wasn't in the Doors. Mm-hmm. And those three guys are playing a Ramada Inn in Kansas City under the name Four Jacks and a Jill.
Now I'm thinking of the lead singer of B-52s. If he wasn't Riders on the Storm. If it was.
Oh my God, we have to recast the Doors with different people. Oh my God. Fred Schneider in the Doors.
Just him doing the poetry, you know.
Oh, man.
Light my fire. By the way, for anyone listening, if you find yourself at a karaoke bar and you realize you can't sing the song to the right notes, do a B-52 voice and you'll get away with it. And here, I'll show you. I will always love you. No one can sing, you know, when Whitney Houston is doing, you know, I will always love you, but B-52 voice, you get away with it.
God. All right, so here, do you want to keep going on football? Because I've got a game where I want to play a game called A Bunch of Guys, where I just throw out a name,
yep,
and you tell me what you see in their future.
All right, let's do it.
You want to do that?
Yeah, we'll do that. Then we'll go to Kimmel, and then
we'll see where I got dots to do, too.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's start off with Travis Hunter, because I'm fascinated by this one, because the hype has now met the reality. What do you see in the future for Travis Hunter?
It's almost impossible. Okay, here's the Captain Obvious point. It's kind of impossible to do something that we've never really seen before. Mm-hmm. Deion Sanders played both ways, but he played 90% at corner. Mm-hmm. Roy Green, let's go to late 70s St. Louis Cardinals. He was a great receiver that played some defensive back. It's a great idea. And the thing with Jacksonville, they've kind of panned themselves in a corner. They got rid of all those draft picks to move up like two spots to get number two to draft Travis Hunter. So I was like, well, you got to justify to the fans and the owners. Like, well, we got rid of all those picks. He's going to be on the field for every play. this isn't, you know, you're in the NFL. It's not Colorado. I think the best case scenario is him at corner. There are fewer great corners out there. It's like, you're our cornerback, and then you're our special package, third and 12. I'm sorry, Trevor Lawrence. You don't get that toy again. And I would throw him on defense.
Have you seen the Dallas Cowboys doc on Netflix yet?
I haven't. I will watch it at some point.
Okay.
Amy's going away at Grand Canyon
Trail. I'm going somewhere with this. It's actually pretty good. It's sort of soft. When you think about all the things they could have talked about, Matt.
Yeah. Michael Irvin stabbing a guy because he was sitting in his barber's chair.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that could have come up that didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of executive producers who may have been in the story. Mm-hmm. And we know how that goes. Okay. This almost feels like it could be a reverse Herschel Walker trade. Where the picks wind up building somebody else's franchise because there was a name that just looked so shiny you had to have it. You know, usually talent wins. And I'm sure Travis Hunter is going to be a very talented, successful football player. But man, it feels like, because this is a Jacksonville factor, right? Like, this is where I'm ultimately going with this. Don't you feel like it has a better chance to fail because this is the team that always does things that fail?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. If Kansas City, if Philadelphia had done it, if the Rams had done it, then I'd be like, okay, I trust it.
But right.
Yes, it's Jacksonville. I don't trust.
Like Sean McVay for the Rams. Like, he'd be like, no, not on my watch. Never. I'll throw myself down a flight of stairs before I allow this.
And it doesn't work. Like, I remember Bill Belichick, you know, he did it for a little while with, I think it was like Troy Brown, and had success when they were low on cornerbacks. But you've got to pick one. You can't be a double major. You can major in something and minor in something else. He needs to major in pass defense and minor in I will catch a third and 14.
Okay, so I'll go one step further. This isn't just like the double major, because if you do the double major like I did, which was English and religious studies, mm-hmm. they're kind of adjacent.
Right.
You're tapping into the same skills. They're slightly different, but that would sort of be like he's a wide receiver and a tight end. Doesn't seem that crazy. It doesn't happen much, but this would be like if the double major was math and sociology.
Mm-hmm. You can't serve those two masters.
Right.
You have to, you can minor in sociology as you're in math because you want to be a little bit more well-rounded, but you can't have a double major in it. And I mean, I was excited to see what it looks like. It's been underwhelming so far. And I just pick one and become a star there and then have other moments. You know, like Shohei Ohtani only pitches once every 5 days, and even he's got a no-hitter through five innings. They're still pulling him out of the game, and then he hit a home run in the eighth.
All right, so a bunch of guys. I'm just going to throw out names. Yeah. We've got the Bears in Dallas coming up this weekend, which is a fun one. So two different names, one from each team. We'll start off with the Bears and Caleb Williams, because I can't tell. Is this the same story we've seen a million times before? Or is it going to be a Sam Darnold thing where you're like, I don't see it. And then somewhere down the line, he figures it out.
Well, it's because of, you know, you were the Bears and being a quarterback for the Bears is like.
It's just a great, it's an elephant graveyard for quarterbacks.
It's the horror movie where the haunted house is built on the Native American graveyard. It never ends well.
Went to the Super Bowl with Rex Grossman, Matt.
Yeah, they did. Brian Urlacher. I'm worried about Caleb Williams here. Mm-hmm. He looked skittish the first 2 weeks. He looked bad last year. Now, last year, he had Eberflus. Oh, God, Eberflus, shit. But he had a lot of offensive talent. It's like you go back and look at like so many quarterbacks drafted number one overall. They go to a team with no talent. And then what do? They spend all the money in the offseason on the offensive line. And they drafted a wide receiver in the second round. They drafted a tight end in the first round. They brought in Ben Johnson. And I look at Caleb Williams, and it looks like he doesn't have a plan. He does after the first series, he doesn't have a plan. I am terrified because my twin brother's a Bears fan, and I just want to see a Bears quarterback look good.
Well, and the Bears are a bit like the Knicks in the sense that their sport is better when those teams are good.
Yeah.
There are just some teams like, look, I don't like the Knicks. They're in the Atlantic. They're you know, going up against the Raptors all the time. But I will concede that when the Celtics, the Lakers, the Knicks, certain franchises are good, the league gets a bit of shine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I apologize, Atlanta. But if the Hawks or the Falcons are good, no one gives a shit.
Okay, so in the year 2030, who is more likely to be a starter in the NFL? Caleb Williams or J.J. McCarthy with the Vikings? Or anybody, but with the Vikings now.
Yeah. I guess I have to go J.J. McCarthy, who, by the way...
Didn't look very good.
Didn't look good against Atlanta. Horrible. But at the very least, this is the most smallest of sample size theater that we're doing here. This is off Broadway. But at least J.J. McCarthy had that moment late in the third and the fourth quarter against the Chicago Bears on Monday Night Football in his first start. Like, he looked like a quarterback. He looked like a leader. I think all the cliches, but the cliches are there for a reason. There's some truth to it. He had a moment. Caleb Williams has had 19 games now, has not had a moment. You put me in a tough position, yeah. But if I got to choose, I choose.
It's small sample size, but the thing about the NFL is it attracts really smart people. And these people are only thinking about these questions all the time. So the little things they notice, we go, oh, they're stupid. They don't know what they're doing. No. They know so much about what they're doing. And I think about my sister, who as a kid wanted to be a ballerina. She was really good. And so she was trying out for the National Ballet of Canada. And they really liked her dancing. And then they inspected the arch of her foot. And they said, oh, no, it's built a certain way. Your body type's going to change. And you're not going to be built like a ballerina by the time you're 16, 17 years old. She was like 10 or 11 at the time. And it was heartbreaking.
That is crushing.
They were right.
Mm-hmm.
They were right.
Yeah.
She did grow. Wasn't built like a ballerina after that.
They saved her. I mean, in a lot of, they crushed her on that day, but they might have saved her time. I don't know.
Because they do one thing.
Yeah.
And they look at it all day long and think about how do we produce the greatest excellence on this tiny little skill. So I used to give you shit all the time, Matt. Oh, you're not giving these young guys enough of a chance. And then after a while, I was like, I think Matt's right. I think, you know, when you see it, it rarely changes direction. Like Cam Ward, I'm watching very carefully because he seems pretty good.
Yeah.
Right. But most of these guys don't turn out. Marcus Mariota seemed pretty good. Derek Carr seemed pretty good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys who seem pretty good, and then they figure out how to stop them.
Tua.
Honestly, that shark net, Jaws reference, that shark net.
25 minutes in.
There we go. Pretty Jaws effective. Reference. Okay, Dallas, I want to talk to you about Brandon Aubrey. Mm-hmm. Because they ran a draw play to get 4 yards so that he could kick a 64-yard field goal.
As a Giants fan, I'm aware of that. Yeah.
Did you think, oh, great?
I was like, that is so stupid. That is so dumb. And that should have backfired on the Colts against Denver. But then that stupid penalty on Denver gave them a 45-yarder and the Colts won. But here's my thought on this. I am tired of this level of excellence among kickers.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when 50 yards was a big deal. It's like, oh my God, you see that? He kicked a 50-yard field goal. Ooh.
Oh no, 50 yards was leading sports center type stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah, but with Scott Norwood, whoa, this is going to age it. Back when the Bills lost to the Giants in the 1990 Super Bowl, which only seems like yesterday, but it was 35 years ago. That was a 49. No, 47. It was a 47-yard field goal, and he had never kicked a one longer than 46 on grass. Now you're asking him to kick 47? 47 would be a goddamn PAT for this Aubrey fella.
I actually think it was 49, so.
You can check, you know.
I'm checking right now.
Okay, wow.
I'm going to the phone.
By the way, your dexterity, you're holding the mic in the left hand, and you're working the phone in your right is incredible.
Poor Scott Norwood. All I had to do was type in Scott Norwood,
yeah,
and immediately Google offered up the prompt, missed field goal.
Yeah. Does it say how long?
Yeah, there's no need to go over that now.
Yeah, because I'm right.
Because you're right. Okay, yes, exactly. And he was vilified forever. But the truth was, at the time, that was an unrealistic distance.
Yes.
At the very least, a very challenging distance.
Yes. Put him in a hard position.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing now with these field goal kickers, and it's weird because there's an awful lot of missed point after attempts. So it's like the 35-yarder is hard, but the 60-yarder is easy. It's only a matter of time before play calling changes.
It has to.
It has to, right? Because it's three guaranteed points.
And
it's third and 10. You're in midfield. You know, instead of like running, instead of throwing it and trying to get the 10 yards, do you just get 5? Because
it robs of drama. It's like, oh, they're down by 2, and oh, but they've only got 12 seconds left on the kickoff. Then, okay, they get one first down and they win and they kick the field goal. They got to do something with it because it's not as exciting. I'm sorry. Like the kicker spends most of their time with the hibachi during training camp, and now they get to win the game on a 64-yard field goal. By the way, you know why everyone's upset at the tush push right now, Bob?
Mm.
It's not because, I mean,
I'm mad because it got Jalen Hurts points and the fantasy team I was facing had Jalen Hurts at quarterback?
I have Jalen Hurts. I chose him over Bijan Robinson, so shut the fuck up.
Really?
Our league scoring is a little bit different. Quarterbacks mean more in our leagues than others. I hate fantasy football. We don't need to discuss it. I'll just make this point real quick.
Are you 0-2?
I'm in ninth. We just cumulative at the end of the year. I'm ninth out of 10th. So fantasy football is dumb. It's a stupid fart thing for fart people. The NFL right now, it's 2 weeks in, is on the precipice of a boring problem. Mm-hmm. Kansas City's offense is shit. Joe Burrow is out. Miami's going down. 25% of the quarterbacks are hurt. Wait, Jaden Daniels, you haven't looked great, and now you're a little bit injured. Wait, Caleb Williams, what the hell is going on with you? The AFC South. If Daniel Jones is the best quarterback in your division, your entire division needs to take a look in the mirror. And because of that, everyone's pissed off because of fantasy, because everyone's got a lot of Eagles on their team, and they've got like 100 passing yards a game. And the Eagles are winning games with the most primitive play that was a novelty and is now boring. That's why everyone hates the tush push, because we right now have had kind of beyond Buffalo, Baltimore, it's kind of been an unspectacular start to the NFL season from an aesthetic point of view.
The point's been made. The tush push will go away when somebody gets really hurt.
I hope it goes away
soon. It looks like a rugby scrum.
It does.
And somebody's going to get hurt.
And it's going to be either a center or it's going to be a defensive.
The funny thing is, you watch the tush push and those offensive linemen are basically cramming their heads against the wall at full force, and the league's okay with it. But if you look twice at a quarterback,
I know.
Yeah, tell me the world is fair. All right. Well, since you could use a pick me up, next name is Malik Nabers.
Listen, I can't believe he caught that pass from Russell Wilson, like 60 yarder. He was getting bashed in his helmet by the defensive back.
The guy was covering his eyes.
Yeah, and the ball just fell right in his arms. I mean, Russell Wilson, that's
hell of a throw.
That's a
hell
perfect of a throw. And then just Nabers, his ability just to hold on, it was remarkable. Listen, my favorite thing about Malik Nabers is, he acknowledged, he's like, I've got a resting bitch face. If you see me on the sidelines and it looks like I'm grumpy, I get it. Wide receivers, we do it. He's like, no, that's just my resting bitch face.
But if you're successful, it can work for you. Think about Robert Parrish.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like, people didn't like Greg Oden. They're like, oh, that guy is old, only because he was broken down.
Yeah.
If he was really good, they'd be like, oh, my God, he looks so mature. Robert Parrish, Hall of Famer. Oh, yeah, he looked so strong and intense. Yeah, so, it's always correlated with success. All right, last one I'm going to do here. Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll's 74 years old. I just want to reiterate.
Yeah.
He's 74 years old.
I've got a dark answer to this. Bobby Bowden said there's only one thing that happens to famous coaches after they retire. They die.
Right.
And he brought up the Bear Bryant example. Bear Bryant retired from Alabama and passed away within 6 months. It's the just reinvigorated need to keep doing it. Or maybe he just hates his grandchildren. He's like, I want to be working. I'm tired of my grandchildren. I'm not sure which one it is.
Do you know what? I'm always amazed how happy and healthy he looks, though. He looks like one of those guys who hosts a show on PBS, like, eat blueberries and live forever. And they do like the 1 hour infomercial. If he did get out of this, he should 100% go the Larry King route and just start hawking wellness products.
Oh, yeah. Just him and Tom Brady. I mean, Brady's the owner of the Raiders. They could do TV12 together, the two with him.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay, one more name then, because I do have to ask about Tom Brady. If it's not Tom Brady, are we having the conversation, is he cheating being a Fox broadcaster and being in the box for the Vegas Raiders because he's an owner?
If it's any other quarterback, any other broadcaster, they're not allowed to do it. The guardrails go up. I'm sure there's no advantage for the Raiders, but if I'm the other owners, I get it. Like, wait, the broadcaster who hangs, and most of those production meetings, you really don't learn anything from it. This is more of an optic thing. And from an optics point of view, it doesn't look great.
It reminds me a bit of a much milder, more innocuous version of Adam Silver and Kawhi Leonard and Steve Ballmer and the Clippers, where you go, look, I know everybody does this and I don't want the headaches. Do I want to come down on this guy? No, because he's the most powerful guy in my league. In both cases, both commissioners have to look at this and go, God, why couldn't it be just some schlub that nobody knows? Why are you embarrassing me with the celebrity that everybody knows?
Raptors, we dodged a bullet. Looking back, we got the best out of Kawhi, and that was the perfect time to get out of that relationship.
Okay, well, you know what? This actually sets up ...
Ooh.
So we'll talk Kimmel, but let me go through. I got four ...
Yeah.
Okay.
You're full Kaiser Soze.
All right. You ready?
Yeah.
Oh, I came in. Look, I have a little. I put together a booklet of questions. Mm-hmm. What does it say that more TO fans are worried about Austin Matthews possibly getting hurt before preseason than Bo Bichette actually being hurt before the playoffs? ... Hey, Matt. Apropos of nothing, but what wine pairs well with Civil War? ... I have a way to make the Leafs more likable, and the key is Rocky III. ... And I have a way to get Connor McDavid into a Leaf sweater, and the key is Donald Trump Jr. ...
See, you gave me wine, and you gave me Connor McDavid and Donald Trump, but we need to go with Clubber Lang. We need to go... let's get back to this this Rocky III thing here, Bob.
When Rocky III starts, mm-hmm. Rocky's the champion.
Yeah.
But he's losing his edge.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not feeling it. And the young and hungry guy comes along and takes him out. And then he has to find the eye of the tiger. He becomes an underdog. He hooks up with Apollo Creed and he goes to the gym in Los Angeles. And he's got to train and get mean and nasty. And here's what the Leafs need. We hate them because they feel like underperforming overdogs.
Yes.
But let Mitch Marner be your Clubber Lang.
Mm.
We need a villain.
Yes.
We need a villain that makes us suddenly the underdog. You know what? Instead of how are we going to replace Mitch Marner? Fuck you, Mitch Marner. You killed Mickey.
I love it. I never even... There's so many different moving parts there, but you're right. The Leafs' villain has always been like Brad Marchand or something like this. I love the idea of basically, this is our FU Mitch Marner year. We can prove we can do it without him.
The better Mitch Marner does,
the better for the Maple Leafs.
The better for the Maple Leafs.
Right.
Maybe not in terms of winning right now, but in terms of likability.
Mm-hmm.
Because this team has a likability problem. They feel like we want to love them, but they haven't given us anything lovable. But nothing succeeds quite like an underdog that finds its mojo.
If Mitch Marner wins the Conn Smythe, I'm going to have to leave sports radio.
When Mitch Marner wins the Conn Smythe.
By the way, apropos of nothing. The Eglinton, you know the Eglinton LRT that yeah. still isn't ready yet?
Yeah.
They started construction of that 1 year before Morgan Riley was drafted.
You know, for everybody who says that government is inefficient...
You're right.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah, good call. Good call. Okay, one of the other ... I got to know, how are you going to link McDavid with Trump?
Okay, so Donald Trump Jr. went to his dad and said, hey, Dad, we can make a ton of money from crypto.
Mm-hmm.
And so they started a company, not Donald Trump, but his family did. The Trump family has a crypto company.
Which They're has like, nothing to do with the government. The government won't help them at all because those have to be divided.
And as we know, that firewall is impermeable.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But so they created the Trump coin, the meme coin. They put it out there. It gets flush with cash. Insanely flush with cash.
Oh, nice. Good for them.
And it's untraceable money.
Oh.
Like, it could be everyone from you to Vladimir Putin who's buying that coin.
Odd we don't know. Choose him for a name, but okay. All right.
Well, I didn't say you guys are alike.
Yeah.
In fact, I was pointing out that you're unalike, Matt. That's the crazy range.
Mm.
A wild despot like Putin.
Yeah.
Lovable guy like yourself.
Hey.
But you could never know. So... MLSE, in the spirit of Kawhi Leonard and Steve Ballmer and all these things, what if they created a McJesus meme coin?
Oh, yeah.
Put in $10 million. Connor can sell it. We have no idea where the $10 million came from. Total cap circumvention. Connor gets the money.
And then
none are the wiser. In fact, it's illegal to know who gave him the money.
You know what I love? The only thing I don't like about this?
Meme coin, Matt.
I love it, Bob, except for one thing. If this happened, I would have to learn what NFTs and meme coins and crypto is. I have no idea.
Matt, here's the beauty of it.
Mm.
You'd never know.
Oh, because I don't want to talk about it.
You'd never know.
Okay.
Oh. Some third party, some Uncle Dennis type comes up to Connor and says, hey, let's create a crypto coin.
You know who's got the most pressure in the NHL?
Hmm.
It's Evan Bouchard. It's Stuart Skinner. The only reason
I was going to say Stuart Skinner feels like he's the
it's,
guy.
It's a lot of those guys. It's everyone not named Leon Draisaitl. When McDavid isn't signed, he's like, I want to know that I can keep winning. Mm. So everyone else on the team, if you guys aren't great, I'm out of here.
Hey, goalie.
Yeah.
Wayne Gretzky's leaving unless you're good.
Yeah, exactly.
Go sit between the pipes.
Yeah, that's what that is.
Yeah, okay. By the way, what wine does pair well with Civil War? This can quickly get us into Kimmel.
Let's see. You're going to just find the one, the most alcohol, the one I usually give with this. I'll be more specific. I would go either with Amarone. Those are usually even up to 16% alcohol, just the way they dry the grapes, which concentrates it. You get higher alcohol. So I would go with that. I believe Chateauneuf du Pape and Southern Rhone has one of the highest minimum alcohol ABVs in all of France. So go Chateauneuf du Pape or go with an Amarone.
So when civilization crumbles and we all go up north and live in the woods to hide or repropagate the species or whatever, are there any vineyards up there? How far north are the vineyards?
Oh, but then you get up there, and let me say this on the front end.
Okay.
No offense to cool climate varietals or hybrids. We don't, but they're not there yet. Yeah, you can get up in the Collingwood area, and there is ones that it's like Marquette. It's all these like grapes that have been bred to deal with the cold climate. So far, they're not great wines. And again, apologies. There are a couple good ones, and if we focus on them the same way we focus on Pinot, I know we can make higher quality. I'm trying to be politically correct for the
Northern wine. I was going to say, you know what I realized, Matt?
Yeah.
You're wine woke.
Oh, I'm totally wine. I am wine woke.
Yeah, everybody gets a participant ribbon, eh, buddy?
Yeah. Hey, listen, you're... And by the way, and don't call it cool climate varietals. We prefer to call it hybrid. By the way, that last sentence is true.
I'm sure they're all true, Matt. Okay, so you love Kimmel.
Yeah.
And he was suspended indefinitely, which we'll assume means fired. Mm-hmm. But they probably didn't have time legally to actually fire him. So he's suspended indefinitely because of comments that were made after the assassination of Charlie Kirk, comments that were made largely about Donald Trump and the, well, before we get into the mechanics of how it actually happened, you're a big Kimmel fan.
Yeah.
And you're a big free speech fan.
Yeah.
So how does this sit with you?
It's disgusting. You know, it's, and let me say this. If teachers who teach children are going on social media happy that Charlie Kirk got murdered, I understand why a lot of parents are like, I don't want my child being taught. Like, I think it's disgusting when people have done that. And I understand someone saying, I don't know if I want the teachers who are laughing about someone getting murdered. I'm here for that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But the right has always been about free speech, free speech, free speech. Don't get canceled. And now they're doing that thing. And, you know, very snowflake, very woke of the hard right. And also, like, hey, you know, for Trump or everyone, you got more important things to worry about than a show that you say has failing ratings. What are you worried about? A guy who's in Kimmel is an untalented loser with bad ratings. Why do you worry about him? And the other part is, it was a funny joke when they show Donald Trump being asked, how do you feel about Charlie Kirk being murdered, friend of yours? And within a second, Trump's like, do you see the construction going on over there? No one thought it could get done. And I love Kimmel's line. He's like, Donald is
grieving like a four-year-old.
He's mourning the loss of Charlie Kirk the way a four-year-old mourns the loss of a goldfish. That's a great line.
Are there things that you could say in the wake of the Charlie Kirk assassination that are problematic? I think there are.
Yeah.
And I really like, look, you know, my politics lean towards the left.
Yeah.
But I take no joy in any of this. I think my daughter summed it up exactly, which is I'm not going to celebrate his death and I'm not going to honor it either. You know what I mean? Like, you can see this as a complicated thing where somebody that you fundamentally didn't agree with, it's still like tragic to see political violence spill over. And honestly, political violence is viral. We should all be a little scared as well. So look, there's a million prongs to this conversation. But the thing with Kimmel that really bothers me, he didn't say anything about Charlie Kirk. He actually laughed at Donald Trump and the way Donald Trump handled things. And then they've tried to make it seem like he was insensitive to the family or the legacy. No,
nope,
he was being critical of a politician that he said probably didn't handle this in the right way. And when they showed it, they made Trump look like an asshole.
Yeah, because that's what he is.
So the FCC comes out and says to Disney, quote unquote, Disney, we can do this the easy way or the hard way. Now, the affiliates that are carrying Kimmel's show, Nextstar, are in the middle of a $6.2 billion acquisition, which could be blocked by, you got it, the FCC. So what's different about this, as opposed to people wanting to cancel Dave Chappelle over trans comments, is that conversation with Chappelle is in the public sphere. This is a government agency saying, you've mocked us, and now we are going to weaponize our power to shut you down. If you are on the right side of politics, this should be anathema to you. This is exactly what you've said we can never allow happen.
Big government. You want government out of this. You want government out of that. Well, now this is Trump using big government, you know, to settle scores.
Look, people on the right, and amazingly, like, I think a lot of people who are right of center have become some of the most canny commentators that we have right now, whether it's David Frum, whom I don't agree with about everything, but he says a lot of really interesting things. David Brooks from The Times, Andrew Coyne here in Canada, like, people who are right of center actually occupy a very, very important role in trying to make sure our society, you know, it's always checks and balances on either side of the ledger, because we're trying to figure out what's the path that works the best, and no one team has the exclusive solution. I've been mortified, Matt, mortified and vilified by certain people because I refuse to celebrate when something awful happens to somebody that I have used viewed as my opponent. And the fact, like, honestly, like, and I'm not trying to kumbaya this, but honestly, one of the things I was thinking about this, and this sounds so crazy, but at the end of the day, if politics isn't like the end of a playoff series, then we're fucked, because teams can beat the shit out of each other for seven straight fucking games, and then they line up at the end of it and shake hands. Mm-hmm. If we can't get there, then we can't play.
It's funny. It makes you miss George Bush. Like when Obama won, Bush left all this congratulatory things. It was like, hey, whatever I can do to help. And we've seen the smooth transition power. What we've just seen is just people being adults and being focused on the important things. And it is crazy. Like, if you tell 1990s, early 2000s us that this Trump fella, you know, would have this sort of impact. Like, that to me is the worst thing, is just civility and having shame and just doing things the right way. And again, we've talked about it many times. I voted for Harper every time I had a chance. Mm-hmm. I voted for NDP in one of the Ontario provincial elections. Like I just, it astounds me where we're at. And there's some on the left as well. But if you are a major Republican, you got to be speaking out against this. If you are just your more right wing types, your Ben Shapiro types, you got to be speaking out against this, because this is an attack on free speech. This is over abuse of government. This is big government, which is the number one thing the right doesn't want.
Interestingly, Tucker Carlson just came out and said that this is an overreach of governmental power. That is, the hypocrisy is so layered on that side of the political spectrum, you don't even know where to begin. But the truth is, nobody likes to criticize themselves. The left are pretty hypocritical about a bunch of stuff too.
Yep.
In the end, I'm just looking for common sense solutions. And where do I set magnetic north for me in terms of, I believe in a redistribution of wealth. You know, I think globalization was a great idea, and we wouldn't be so fucked right now if we'd taken some of that money and actually reinvested it back into society, as opposed to just making individuals rich.
The problem is that, like I've always said, I had a great theory about how to shrink the gap between rich and poor.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the only problem is it requires the government to be good. And look at California, and just, you know, they spend billions on a high speed train. That's never going to happen. But what I want to do,
the Eglinton LRT.
There you go. Every billionaire, we're going to build a statue for you. And we're like, good job. Honestly, good job. You became a billionaire. There was hard work. Okay. And here's the good news. You're always going to be a billionaire. But for every dollar you got more, that's a billion. We're gonna take it. And guess what? We're gonna steal it because of the communist government, and then we're gonna use that money, and we're gonna help make sure that lower class people can get ahead, and then they'll have more money, and then they'll pay more taxes, and then when there's fewer poorer people, there's less crime. So guess what? Every rich person, every now and then your kids can be walking the street and they might get hit by a stray bullet. But because that's where crime comes from. It doesn't come from skin color, it comes from, if you're poorer, there's more of a chance you might commit crime because you feel you got nothing to live for. So my plan, billionaires, unfortunately, we're going to take money away from you. You can call me a socialist, whatever. But we're going to build you a great statue, and we're going to sing songs about you, and you're still going to have $1 billion, which seems okay to me.
I'll put it to you this way.
Yeah.
And you went through a lot there, actually. We could probably do a whole separate pod.
Just we got like parsing. 5 minutes
yeah,
left.
Yeah, I was going to say, and sorry. I still want to get to Mel Brooks. But so I'll say this. Just on the side of being rich, to follow up on your point. Be like the quarterback who wins the Super Bowl and buys the offensive line nice watches.
Yours was way better than mine.
Right? Like, are you the quarterback? Yes.
Yeah.
Was your, what you did, more special?
Yeah.
You know, could we have lived without it? No. But you couldn't have done it without your offensive line. And don't be the kind of quarterback who's like, I did this on my own. Anybody who tries to take any glory from me, fuck you.
Yeah.
Right.
Buy them the watch.
Society is the offensive line.
Yeah. Your way of doing it much better than mine.
Okay, so you and I were talking about how to disagree well, and nobody probably in popular culture has ever done a better job of making his opponent look like a bunch of assholes in a way that was both fun and provocative and offensive and non-offensive at the same time than Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
Who's still with us amazingly.
He's doing Spaceballs too.
Honestly, like he's like 97 and he's still working. I actually pitched him as a guest for something I was working on.
God bless him, man.
God bless him. All right, so a quick top five. We're going to bring back the top fives. Top five Mel Brooks movies.
Yep.
I'll give you mine. You tell me if I'm right.
Okay.
Okay. In ascending order.
Five to one.
Number five, Spaceballs.
Yep.
Number four, History of the World Part One. Number three, Young Frankenstein.
Yep.
Number two, Blazing Saddles, which means number one is The Producers. And I can justify it. Go.
Your five through three are fine. It's really about one or two.
That's the big one,
it's
right?
It's always a classic.
This is the Jordan versus LeBron.
Yes. This is The Producers. I think The Producers.
Make the case for Blazing Saddles, and I'll tell you why I didn't pick it when you're done.
I would make the case for Blazing Saddles. I think just, I was going to say better performances, like just there's the relationship between Cleavon Little and Gene Wilder. I might do a slight tick over Zero Mostel and
Gene Wilder.
And Gene, oh yeah, and Gene Wilder. Jesus Christ. And I'm trying to rush because we only have a couple minutes left. You know what it is? I just, as a kid, I just laughed harder at Blazing Saddles. That's it. I just laughed harder at Blazing Saddles.
Okay, so I do think that Blazing Saddles ultimately is the funnier movie. However, the ending, if I may borrow a phrase from wrestling, is a bit of a schmoz.
Okay, yeah.
It doesn't really end. It ends with like a big chaotic scene and they break the fourth wall. It really isn't an ending to the story. However, in The Producers, it's such an elegant, perfect ending because they go to jail and they start a new project and they're getting funding from the guards. And
maybe that's where the Blues Brothers was inspired, at the end of the Blues Brothers.
Yeah, great point. I never thought of that, but that's totally true. So I would say just in terms of what's the better written movie, it's got to be The Producers. Plus, Matt, imagine this pitch today. Okay, we're going to do a musical about Hitler.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Springtime for Hitler and
Germany.
And Hitler.
Winter for Poland and France.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to sing the song.
One and one is two. Two and two is four. I'm so unhappy because I'm losing the war. Dick Shawn.
I think I laughed harder at Blazing Saddles, but The Producers is the better movie.
Yeah, and that was my thing was, what are the better movies? Mm-hmm. Not what are the funnier movies, but what are the better movies?
Off topic, but not. I loved when Jiminy Glick was interviewing Mel Brooks, and the second greatest question ever asked by Jiminy Glick. So what do you got against Hitler anyway?
Did he lose it? Did Mel Brooks lose it?
Mel Brooks was so confused. The greatest question ever asked by Jiminy Glick was talking to Steven Spielberg when he said, so when are you going to do the big one?
That's actually really funny. Ooh, here's a tough one. Here's a Sophie's Choice for you. Jiminy Glick or Between Two Ferns?
It's Jiminy Glick.
I don't know. Between Two Ferns is pretty funny,
Between
though.
Two Ferns is awesome. I'll get on that algorithm, the Instagram algorithm, and all the best burns and all of it. It is awesome.
When he asked Brie Larson, so your parents split up when you were 11.
Yeah.
Was that your fault?
Oh. There's so many good. And listen, I love it. It's so good, but I'm still going to give it to Jiminy Glick.
I say Jiminy Glick with Bill Hader is great because you can crack Bill Hader up and he does and he just can't handle it. Yeah. He's crawling around on the chair like a house cat.
I think at one point he brings up Jackie Robinson, which is nice.
Well, here we are, Matt. We're back. We're doing back. It again. I'm going to have to do the pod either Friday or Saturday next week because guess what I'm doing?
What are you doing?
I'm going fishing for a week.
Ooh, where are you going?
I'm going up north.
Oh, you're going up to your cottage.
Yeah. I'll be cottaging.
Uh-huh, your cottage.
Yeah. You like to bring it up. Yeah. Matt, I'm not pretending I don't have a cottage anymore.
Okay. Very good. So you're going fishing?
I'm going fishing. So I got some family coming up. We're doing a guy's trip. Mm-hmm. Some nephews and my brother-in-law, and we're going to get a boat and we're going to do some fishing.
How many Jaws references are you going to do?
Endless. And how many are going to be understood?
There are going to be so few of them.
I'm going to look at it and I'm going to say, we're going to need a bigger boat. And they're going to look at me and say, no, this one's big enough.
Goodbye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.